This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
A conundrum wages in medicine. Is natural safer than man-made medications? Does natural equal less side effects and toxicity? Should non-licensed persons be able to make recommendations on the use of such products? This controversy is especially smoky when the topic of medical marijuana for people and pets is broached. With 26 states and the District of Columbia having legalized the use of cannabis sativa, and now 7 states and the District of Columbia decriminalizing recreational pot use, more and more people are reporting the health benefits in people and pets. Is pot appropriate for your pet? Why isn't your veterinarian recommending it, or at least talking to you about its use? Dr. Ken Bilowski, the 2016-2017 California Veterinary Medical Association president, is my guest today. We're going to discuss if you should consider using this ancient botanical for your pet. We'll be right back after this short break.
Not pumped about cleaning the litter box? Try World's Best Cat Litter Zero Mess, the litter that gives you 2 times better clumping and more odor control with less litter. That's right. You scoop once and you're done. No chiseling, no scraping, no crumbling, no problem. Looking for fast and easy litter box cleanup? Zero Mess. Try it. You're welcome in advance. Save $2 on World's Best Cat Litter. Visit www.saveonworldsbest.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Dr. Pawlowski, thank you so much. This is a topic, and especially you and I being in California, that comes up so frequently.
Yes, it does, and more so as of late.
What I'd kind of like to do is maybe let's talk initially about some of the background of marijuana, some other natural products, quote unquote, as I mentioned in the lead-in, toxicity and safety, and how marijuana used to be very widely used. There were tinctures that were FDA approved, or at least approved by the government. And what caused this change around? So first, let's chat a little bit about natural. What are your views about natural, safe versus man-made?
Well, just because something is natural doesn't ensure that it is going to be safe. There are, most of the drugs that we use actually come from some synthesized version of a natural substance at some point. So cocaine is a natural product, and there are actually some medical uses for cocaine or a derivative of cocaine, but we all know that there are plenty of problems associated with a substance such as cocaine. So just because something's natural doesn't mean that it's safe, and oftentimes we may take a natural compound and then synthesize it and actually purify it so that we're getting more of the benefits, less of the side effects or bad aspects that might come along with it.
So I love the fact that you bring up cocaine, because if I remember correctly, it was up until the early 1900s that cocaine was widely used in Western medicine, and that I think it was even in Coca-Cola, if I remember correctly, some of the first formulations. So no wonder a lot of people really liked Coca-Cola. What are some of the other natural things that are out there? Okay, poppies. We know a poppy and opium, so that's natural.
Yes, they're poppies. That's where the opium is derived from. And as we talked about cocaine, that's where a lot of anesthetics have been derived from, similar substances as that. But then I get clients all the time asking about things like brewer's yeast and garlic. What are the benefits of these types of things? And where there may be some health benefits sometimes that have to do with some of the vitamins or the antioxidants that may be associated with them. you know, with most of these things, they're not the magic cure-alls that some people would like them to be.
I was fascinated looking up some of the background information on marijuana, that this truly is a very ancient botanical. And back to 2900 BC, there was a Chinese emperor, if I pronounce it correctly, Xi, who was using, or at least referencing, marijuana at that time. And even the Romans, ancient Romans and the Greeks were using it. And supposedly cannabis pollen was actually found on Ramses II mummy. And he was 1213 BC. So this stuff's been around for a really long time.
That would not surprise me.
Well, so marijuana came to the United States, and I believe it was used and thought that it was great for inflammation, and I saw one thing that it was for cooling the uterus, whatever that was doing. Yeah. But when did it become illegal, or a controlled substance at least?
I don't have the specific dates on that, but I mean, that was a few decades ago from my general understanding, and that it was classified as a class one substance.
What's a class one substance?
So a class one substance is purported to have no medical value or uses and has the potential of being addictive. And so that is other things that are classified. Class one would be things like heroin, LSD, substances such as that, PCP. Ironically enough, cocaine is actually a Schedule II drug, which means that it does have medical uses and is sometimes used, or versions of it used, in medicine.
So I do believe that there are some synthetic. You had mentioned earlier that natural doesn't necessarily mean safe, and that many times pharmacologists were able to synthesize a synthetic version of it, or just get those high points of things. I should use high points. We're talking about marijuana, using the beneficial points of a particular substance. So there is a, if it's still legal, a nabilone is a synthetic cannabinoid that people are using for antiemetic, and that's what people are right now. A lot of people are using cannabis for, just straight smoking marijuana or having the edibles. So why this big problem? It seems as though there is a use for it. Why isn't somebody doing research on this?
Because as a Scheduled One substance, there is extremely limited availability of that substance to be able to do research on. So their Mississippi State University, they have the only license by the U.S. government to grow medical marijuana for research purposes, but there are only, from what I understand, a handful of class one licenses that have been issued to study the potential medical benefits in very specific cases. And so there's just not the research being done, because it's not being allowed to be done to determine if or what any of the potential medical benefits are. So it's very difficult to get a hold of, to be able to do the studies, and to actually find out this information.
I think that's where a lot of veterinarians are looking at this, and people in general who have any type of medical knowledge, going, all right, it sounds as though it's good. You hear about these testimonials of people using it for themselves, using it on their pets, you know, a drop for me, a little teeny dab for my Rottweiler because it has whatever issues. But it's like, how do you know it truly is safe? How much do you give? Because I know when you were in practice, you saw animals with toxic exposures coming through your door. What were some of the typical signs that you would see of a pet and made you suspicious that it might have been exposed to marijuana?
Well, they're coming in, they're usually lethargic, drowsy, they may be stumbling, you know, they just appear out of it. They look stoned, is basically, and a classic sign in dogs is that they're dribbling urine. And in a more severe advanced toxicosis, they may come in and be asleep or near comatose.
They keep saying that, you know, marijuana is safe. Marijuana is not toxic. But it does happen that pets, cats, dogs, horses, whoever gets into this, that there have been deaths from marijuana. Is that correct?
Yes. It's not relatively common. We see the whole gamut from just being mildly stoned to being comatose, and those are the ones that get more, that are more severe and could lead to a death. And I personally have not seen a patient die from an intoxication. I do have colleagues, particularly ones that work in emergency hospitals, where they see it much more frequently, and especially as of late in states where recreational use has been decriminalized. The numbers are that they, about fourfold, they're seeing about four times the number of intoxications that they did prior to that. And in those states, like I said, I've had colleagues who have had patients that have died. And it's usually from getting into edibles and, you know, not just a stash of dried leaves, you know, the product itself, but when it's been incorporated into edibles and so in more enticing fashion for our animal patients.
So they definitely have to be concerned about, okay, it got into it, but what was the source? Was it that brownie with the wonderful dark chocolate? Was it a product that you're trying to keep your waistline under control so it has xylitol, that non-nutritive sweetener that for dogs in particular is extremely toxic? So I can see where it's, yes, the other things that go along with that marijuana. I'm glad that you brought up the fact there are states where, yes, it is legal for you to have it medically or have recreational use. And they look at this going, but if my doctor can go ahead and recommend this marijuana for me, why can't a veterinarian recommend it for my pet? What's the answer to that one?
Well, first off, it technically is not even legal for a human physician to recommend or prescribe for a human, because ultimately this is a federal issue, and it is the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration, who oversees all of this, and they maintain that's where any doctor who has a DEA license, that's controlled at the federal level. And so the states may have passed their own laws, but they are in conflict with federal law. And so at any point, the DEA could come in and could supersede any of the states' rights or laws on these issues. That being said, the states that have made it legal, that have made medical marijuana legal or decriminalized recreational use, the states have chosen not to pursue or go after anybody or going after the physicians that make those recommendations. That does not stop the feds from doing it. But in those states, such as California, there was nothing said about veterinarians and animal patients. So even in California here, although at the state level, it's legal for an MD to write a prescription for it, it says nothing about a veterinarian being able to do it. So we don't, you know, not only is it against federal law, but there's nothing in state law. So we don't even have that to fall back on.
It seems like such a catch-22. People are trying it, liking it for whatever reason. MDs, some of them are prescribing it, and there seems to be so many indications. And then a veterinarian, if I understand correctly, even through the letter of the law, we can't even discuss it.
That, unfortunately, that's the reality of this. And all we can do is advise our clients of that, and that we don't have the information, we don't have the studies, so we don't know what the effects are. We can advise them what the signs of intoxication are and what they need to do if they suspect that or see something like that, which would be, you know, to get them to a veterinarian for decontamination and treatment of those, you know, of those symptoms or side effects. But ultimately, what it comes down to, were I or any veterinarian to discuss or recommend, I mean, we can discuss from the fact that it's not legal and we don't have the information, but if we make a recommendation or a prescription, we are putting our DEA license at risk and ultimately our veterinary license that's monitored by the state. But the Veterinary Medical Board, they are tasked to uphold all federal and state laws. So if we make that recommendation, we could actually lose our license to be able to practice what we've gone to school and spent our life and our career devoting our time to.
So when people do ask us, it's not that we're trying to skirt the conversation as such. It really puts our license, our livelihood, our ability to help other people at major risk. So I can see that it's a horrible catch-22 because, yes, veterinarians are in the profession of helping animals and helping people too. We just aren't able to do this. With your knowledge of medical marijuana, because I know that you've done your research in this and people are asking you all the time, what are the proposed benefits of marijuana in pets?
Well, we hear claims of just about everything under the sun. So we hear anti-inflammatory, analgesic, or to reduce pain, anti-emetic to reduce nausea and vomiting, anti-seizure, anti-convulsant, for behavioral, for hyperactive dogs. You know, there are people touted that it can be beneficial as a chemotherapeutic agent in treating cancer. You know, just generally beneficial in old age. And so that's concerning. Any drug that's purported to be able to take care of everything makes me skeptical that, what is the true benefit? It would be great to have one drug that's a magic cure-all, but I personally find that difficult to believe. Do I believe that there may be, some medicinal properties for some of those things? It's very possible if we could get the studies to determine those things. But unfortunately, we just don't have that. And that's part of when the client asks, I don't know what the answer is because those studies haven't been done. And, there may be some people's personal opinions that they feel that their dog did better on these things, but we don't know. And we don't know all of the, there are over 400 different compounds in marijuana, and we don't know what the effects of all of those things are. And we do know that dogs have the highest number of cannabinoid receptors of any mammal. And so they are potentially more susceptible to not only the potential benefits, but also the side effects and the negative aspects of it. So we don't know doses. We don't know what compounds may be treating what diseases or effects in our patients.
So it gets down to research, very definitely. I'm chatting right now with Dr. Ken Pawlowski, the California Veterinary Medical Association's 2016-2017 president. If this discussion is giving you the munchies, well, we'll give you a little bit of a break so you can do what you need to do. Come back. We'll be finishing up just a sec. Stay tuned.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Retrievers, Labradors, Goldens are the main breeds that come through our door, but we'll train anything with four legs and a tail. My husband and I own a kennel. We train hunting dogs and also have a boarding and grooming business. And our dogs, they're athletes, and we feed a very quality food. You can't get enzymes in a commercial dog food because they cook it at such a high heat that so much important nutrition is just cooked right out of it. But adding Dynavite to their diet has every single dog in my kennel looking better than they have ever looked.
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Dynavite is nutrition.
If you want the dog to be healthy, you got to feed it something healthy.
DINOVITE.
Dynavite's the bomb.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
Dynavite for life.
DINOVITE.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Pawlowski, it's interesting that you say that dogs, because people say, okay, it's worked on me. I have rheumatoid arthritis, and my old Rottweiler has arthritis, so I've been using a tincture of what I have on my pet, and it really seems to make a difference. So, yes, people always like to have this give and take where we think, okay, dogs are so much like us. In many respects, you're right. They are like us, but they can vary differently with the number of receptors. But as I understand, now there are compounding dispensaries that are trying to use hemp as a source, saying, fine, we're going to take out the psychoactive aspects, the THC, and just use the, I can never pronounce it correctly, CBD. So how is hemp different from cannabis? Because they're both cannabis, but the, tell me a little bit about hemp. We'll just go there.
So, well, cannabis refers to the plant, and then marijuana refers to the portions of the plant that are higher in the psychoactive components, so the THC and some of the other cannabinoids. Hemp is, so that tends to be the leaves, the flowers, the buds, that portion of the plant. Hemp is referring to portions of the plant, so more the stalks and the stems that are lower in the psychoactive substances such as THC. And so those are used often for fiber. You know, so there are, you know, so hemp rope. You know, now there are textiles that are being made with hemp, and that it has properties for that. So because those portions of the plant tend to be lower in the psychoactive substances, some have felt that if they use that portion to extract some of the other components, that might be legal to get some of the other non-psychoactive substances, such as CBD, cannabidiol. And it gets very tricky because the federal government has set a limit of its 0.3 or 0.03, I'm sorry, I forget exactly, percent of THC. If there's more than that in a product, then that is considered illegal. So regardless of what portion of the plant it comes from, if it comes from the hemp portion or it comes from the marijuana portion, if there is greater than that level of THC and it is caused to enter the body, then it is illegal. So if it's an article of clothing, so if it's a doggy sweater that's made from hemp and it's worn by the dog, that is legal. If it is hemp oil, but there is still greater than the cutoff of the 0.3% or 0.03% THC, and that's administered and put into the mouth, it enters the body, then that is illegal.
So it seems as though most of these hemp products have some level, and it might be very minimal amount, in theory, of the THC, the active component. I'm fascinated when going to the store, grocery store, and there's hemp this and hemp drinks and hemp lotions and all these other products, some of which, you know, are the digestibles. And you kind of wonder, knowing that our nutraceutical industry is so poorly regulated, is the DEA truly out there measuring these levels of restricted components in all these products, or is it somewhat the Wild West?
It's a combination of the two. I would say it probably borders more on the Wild West, but the DEA has gone out and looked at some of these products, and each of the last 2 years has compiled a list and has sent out cease and desist orders for a number of these products. But, you know, it's a relative handful of products. And as you said, you can walk into, you know, many stores and there are dozens of these products. So they are not able to evaluate and make the determination on every product that's out there. So in those cases, a lot of it would be buyer beware. You know, they're trying to determine in some of these products, but they're just not able to for all of them.
I was doing some looking online prior to this conversation and seeing that there are many of our colleagues who are producing cannabinoidal products for their pets, recommending it, producing it, selling it, you know, online, that you can get these hemp-based products. So what's your usual response when a client says, okay, I went online, a veterinarian is recommending this, producing this, recommending it. Why can't I consider this to be safe and effective? Because a veterinarian is recommending it.
Well,
first of all, that veterinarian is breaking federal law and is, you know, putting their license at risk, as we discussed. Second of all, they are determining this just based on their own experience or thoughts. There have been no, you know, large-term controlled studies to determine exactly, you know, what those benefits are, what the dosage is. And there are so many different strains of cannabis being produced out there that have, each one has various levels. Some are higher in THC and lower in CBD. Some, you know, they're trying to grow that are high in CBD and low in THC, not to mention the other, the dozens and hundreds of other compounds that are in there that we don't fully understand the effects or the synergies between all of those. And so, you know, they're just kind of concocting their own little thing and saying that, okay, we think this works for this, and this is how much we think you should give, but nobody knows for sure, and nobody knows. And oftentimes, the patients that it's being given to, you know, they want to give it because it has some illness or some debilitation, and it may be receiving other approved medications, and we don't know what the interactions between those things are, good or bad. And so it, you know, it's worrisome from that standpoint. And I also worry that if somebody is giving a cannabis product to their pet and they perceive that it's doing better, why are they perceiving that? Is it because of the psychoactive effect and the pet just feels better because it's high, or because it's actually improving medically? The client, the owner, may perceive that the pet is doing better just because that pet is high and feels better, but the medical condition could actually be progressing, whereas if they were actually seeking legitimate treatment and therapy, we may actually be able to cure or improve or prolong that animal's life, especially, you know, when we talk about things like cancer. And, you know, the pet may feel better on cannabis for a month or two, but that disease is going to progress. Whereas there may be chemotherapies or other types of therapies that we could either cure or perhaps prolong that patient's life by a year or two.
It's always that catch-22, especially when you're the pet parent and you're looking at your pet who's suffering for whatever condition is. Sometimes you don't care what it is. You just want that pet to feel better. And I can see that, yes, there are times when cannabis, CBD, may be masking signs. What I know is also a major concern about so many veterinarians, and I'll have clients personally who'll come in and say, you know, kind of under their breath, yes, my pet's on CBD. It's like, okay, and where are you getting this? How did you determine how much to give, what form, et cetera, frequency of dosing? And so, oh, yes, at the dispensary that I go to, they have this person who's, oh, been working with marijuana for years and is extracting it and is really very knowledgeable. And I always take, you know, a step back and a deep breath going, and what's their medical background of how do they know what to prescribe, especially as you're saying, there's no information that we as veterinarians can get our hands on. What are they using? What do you tell your clients when they say, yes, I'm going to a lay practitioner, if you want to call them that, who's recommending CBD for my pet?
I tell them first and foremost that this person is actually practicing veterinary medicine without a license. So that is very frustrating that, you know, we have these practitioners out there that are doing that. And as you pointed out, where is their medical training? You know, they may have some experience with this particular one substance, and they purport that that's going to cure everything that any patient ever has. Whereas as a trained veterinarian who's spent, you know, at least 8 years of studying, not to mention all of the continued education and the practical experience, we have the whole armament available of all of the medications and other types of therapies available to us. So we don't have just one tool in our bag. We have a huge number of tools. And this person, you know, they're in business to sell their product. So that's what they want to do. They want to sell their product. And they have a product or a version of their product, but it still all comes from one substance, and they don't have the studies. They may feel they have a sense that this might help with something, but there are no studies to back them up on this use. And what are they going to do if something goes wrong with that patient? Who are they going to blame? Who are they going to go after? Because there's nobody overseeing them.
I think there are times when these practitioners and probably pet owners too think that veterinarians are just trying to corner the market, sell our medications, you know, follow our recommendations because we want to keep a monopoly on this industry of pet care. And in reality, we're really just trying to do the best for the pet, best for the person. And I think if I'm hearing you correctly, it's like, yes, we're interested in knowing whether or not there are medicinal reasons. It seems as though there may be for knowing how long it's been used, but it needs to be further studied. What would be your takeaway message from all of this?
Absolutely. We want to have everything available at our disposal to be able to use. And so if something has benefit, we want to know that. And if it is a miracle cure, if it is a miracle drug, all the better. But we would like to have that, and we would like to know, what are the things that we can use it for? What are the appropriate dosages so that we can get the maximum benefit with the least risk of serious side effect? And, you know, along those lines, CVMA, we have just written a letter to the AVMA, the American Veterinary Medical Association, asking them to try and pursue with the federal government to look into more research, that we need research. And that's what the public and that's what the professions need to demand from the federal government, that more studies be done. So let's find out once and for all if there are benefits. What are the side effects? Let's find out what the appropriate dosage is if there are benefits, what those are, so that we have this at our disposal along with our current medications and therapies so that we can best treat our pets for whatever it is that is ailing them.
Treating pets, treating people, we just need to learn more. Dr. Ken Pawlowski, thank you so much for being with us today. I think this has really opened a lot of people's eyes that there's potential, but we just need to learn more. And if you want to learn more, please tune in next week. We'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz with The Pet Doctor. Thank you very much, Mark Winter, for being our producer. You do a fabulous job. Take care. Have a great week.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.